modern band. Greetings and salutations. My name is Nick Hodge, a professional geek for Microsoft in Australia. What we'll be talking about in this session over the next 45 or however many minutes we've got, I know I've got to finish at 12:45, is looking at how we sell our apps using the Windows Store. And also David here, who's just in the midst of configuring his virtual machines, will take us through how we deploy apps in a non-store without having to use the store. A line of business and enterprise-style application. One of the key things I'd like to point out right at the beginning is how we build Windows 8 applications, whether they're deployed via the store or whether they're deployed via the mechanisms that David will demonstrate internally in an organisation that is sideloading outside of the store. The way applications are built are exactly the same. So what we're much more talking about is the store side of stuff. So the three things that we'd need to get out of this particular session is getting your apps in the store. And then what I'm going to do is ask two Australian developers who already have apps in store to talk about, firstly, the app certification experience and just sort of some of the experience involved in that part of the process. And then I'll have Patrick Klug, so Gary Holden will be the first speaker, and then Patrick Klug will take us through what is behind the scenes, what metrics do you get when you have an app in the store, what do you see, what should you expect, so we can actually see inside the engine that is the app store. And then David Tazar will talk to us about how we deploy our apps in a without the store, that is to employees or trusted people within your organisation. So the store is the new thing from a Windows perspective. Microsoft are, prone to say this is the most significant developer opportunity ever. There is some sound logic and science behind this. There are over 660 million Windows 7 devices in the world, and each one of those can run Windows 8. The other thing with Windows 8 is that this is going to be Microsoft's biggest launch from an operating system perspective since Windows 7. In fact, hasn't been in the operating system, but you get the point. Gives me as an employee some sort of confidence that that's the case is when you look at the touch-based Ultrabooks and the touch-based devices that were shown at some of the recent conferences overseas, and you're seeing different vendors, our different partners, our different hardware manufacturers producing innovative things based on Windows 8. If you go into the showcase, the exhibition area in the Microsoft showcase where the office area is, there's an 88-inch PixelSense screen that is a 10-input touch screen that's about yay big. It's got a PC in it. It's just absolutely amazing that you can sit there and touch it just like you're touching a Samsung Series 7, and it's a touch-based interface. As I illustrated yesterday, or talked to yesterday, touch is the new input mechanism, only been with us for about 5 years or so, but it is moving to mainstream, it's moving to the desktop, people are going to expect it everywhere. Virtually to a person that I speak to who's doing Windows 8, has been working with Windows 8 for 12 months now and doing development work, when they go to a laptop that is not touch sensitive or an LCD screen that's not touch sensitive, they find themselves touching the screen. Anyone experience that here? Yeah, you do. It is a natural way of working. I'm not saying it's the only input mechanism, but we are moving that to a primary input mechanism. So we're going to see a whole bunch of new machines appear when Windows 8 ships in late October, early November on final devices. And with those numbers of devices, with the Windows 7s, the machines that have the ability to run Windows 8, those that have the ability to get the free or the small paid upgrade, it is pretty significant. And for the first time, we'll have an ability for you guys, developers, to come along with us on that ride. Traditionally, Microsoft's process for you guys app developers is we're usually here trying to sell you Visual Studio or TFS or cloud XYZ thingy doodad jigamabobba thing. That is not the case here. What we're doing is saying, hey, we've got this marketplace, this store that was going to be deployed across all these devices, and we would like you to take your artistry, your skills, and build apps and be successful with us and put those apps in the store and show them to the world, which is a very different proposition, a very sort of different sort of partnership, a very different sort of relationship between ourselves, Microsoft, and you guys as developers and skilled artisans in this space. And it also promotes different sorts of opportunities. I speak to people who code .NET during the day for XYZ Corporation, and at night they build apps, whether it's on competitive platforms, for competitive stores and getting into doing stuff on for the Windows store, or people who sort of have done some phone stuff and are moving into the Windows 8 world, or people who are sort of coming along with us with this ride as we, you know, go into this new, most latent opportunity that I think you'll see from Microsoft for a period of time. So the store is designed for discovery. We're going to have unprecedented reach. We've got all sorts of wonderful, flexible, different business models where you can monetize if you wish to do that. Or you can just use our store as a distribution mechanism. You don't have to actually make money. You don't have to put ads in, or you don't have to charge for your app. If you just want to put your app in the store and have as many people as you want looking at it, you can sort of think of yourself as, you know, a Kardashian just wanting to be famous. Maybe that's a bad example. But if you just want your name out there, if you want to prove to people that you're a good dev and get a job somewhere, the ways of doing it are immense. Also, we have some transparent terms and also economics as far as revenue sharing, when it comes to revenue sharing is concerned. So firstly, discovery. One of the things that for every app that's in the store, there is a web page that will also appear. So apart from the app appearing in the store, there will be a web page that is browsable from anyone with a web browser. So they don't have to be on Windows 8, they don't have to even be on a PC, they don't even have to be on a PC, they can be on a phone or something like that. When they search, they find an application. We will make sure that it appears as best we can in all search engines with high response, high rates. But one of the other things that we're doing with apps, that's okay, David, is something like this. I'm probably a little easier to demonstrate this rather than point it out on the screen. So I'll just jump over to my machine here. Okay, so let's jump over into Windows 8. If you imagine I have got an application I go to a website, and this is just a random website on the internet, and by simply adding some extra bits of HTML in the header tag, what happens is we get this little wrench with a plus icon over on the side here. So when a user in a Windows 8 device browses to that site and there is, you have an application associated with your web or your web service, what the user can do is, go to the app for this particular site, and what that does is it launches the Windows App Store to the URL for your app and allows the user to download, purchase, and install it. For something like Evernote, one of the things if you already have, say, the Evernote web app, and you go to the Evernote website through the IE10 Windows App style browsing. They can also swap to Evernote, so it's smart enough to recognise that the Evernote's already installed. So when you click on it, it will just launch as the app itself. So apart from doing the search engine optimization, I don't want to use SEO because that's not a very nice word, but making sure that you appear high in search engine rankings, publishing something to the web, doing some smart stuff inside the browser, giving users a chance to jump into your application. This URL is live, so if you want to go to that, it's just simply got the two links there on how to add pins, site notifications, if you want to do that, and also how to add those things to add the application stuff to your website. It's just some extra little bit of HTML, very similar to the way that you do it with iOS. I haven't actually looked at the Android stuff myself, but with iOS, you put some extra things at the top, the header of a web page, and it just makes it look a little bit more interesting. Okay, to an iOS user. Oops, I already went through that. the reach side of stuff. I already talked about this a little bit earlier, but you know, over 660 million, according to IDC, as of March or May this, you know, I think it's May this year, Windows 7 devices all able to run Windows 8. We've also announced the Surface, which radically, I think, changes Microsoft's approach to the marketplace by doing its own hardware. I think it also signals to the market that Microsoft is serious about Windows 8 and serious about touch, much more than anything that I can say up here on stage. In terms of the reach, we have the ability to publish store and apps in over 100 different languages. You get a choice to do this when you submit to the store in 200 markets. And we also have local pricing and settlement in over 70 different markets. And essentially the top 40 by GDP are covered. In Australia, which is all that really matters for us sitting in this room here, we do settle in Australian dollars. We do just deposit into Australian banks. One of the little things that I will point out here, and hopefully for the recording as well, is that originally I think the store had planned to pay via PayPal as well as a BSB-style account, but I haven't actually seen that turned on yet in the store that when I registered recently. At the moment, it's paying via a BSB-style bank account. The revenue sharing. So if you have an application that's priced, we'll just make this nice and round, say $10. You price an application, put it in the store, price it at $10. 70% of the revenue of that goes to you. So you get, what did I say, $10? You get $7. Just making sure I can do the maths in my head. You get $7 out of that. Microsoft makes takes the 30% as, you know, being the retailer, being the store, and the promotion and those sorts of things that you get. However, what happens at $25,000 of revenue for your application across the lifetime of that application is that it jumps to 80% to you. So you get 80% of the revenue, Microsoft gets 20%. So there's this nice little speed bump once you've made made that amount of money as an extra little incentive to publish in the store if you're putting revenue on your application. You control the pricing of your application. You can change the pricing of your application. You know, the pricing is something that you get to do. You get to price from $1.49, which is sort of a base level price that we set, to $999.99. It's also a tiered model, so there's particular tiers or particular pricing points, smooth pricing points that are along that pricing range. As far as business models are concerned, we have the simple one-time purchase. You go into the store, price is $1.49. Before the user can install it, they need to transact. They need to, with their Microsoft account, provide some money to the Microsoft store, and then they get the ability to run that application. We also have very easily APIs for time-limited trials. I'll show some of this in code in just a moment. And also, we can do feature-differentiated trials as well. So you can do some interesting things in code to show different parts of your application. We also allow for persistent and expiring purchases. You can think of this as like a subscription model. If you'd like to the user to subscribe to certain elements, we have that mechanism inside the store. One of the other things that we do permit in terms of flexibility is that you can transact outside of the store without Microsoft making any money on that transaction. So if you think of, a subscription model where you are producing, let's say, magazines on a regular basis, you can put the application, the reader application in the store for $0. People can download it, install it. And then the transaction to subscribe, to get that digital content and see different things can happen on your e-commerce system, not Microsoft's, on your e-commerce system. So you know, the security and the relationship and the storage of this, you know, login data is all between you and the end user. You get to keep 100% of that transaction because Microsoft is not adding any value in that. We do permit that sort of model with the Microsoft Store.
Can you buy free apps on the store?
Yes, you can. $0 stores. Yeah. So.
No,
it's and free. I think I said it, but it wasn't clear in the slide. But I'll be very distinct and clear. You can put apps in the store that are $0. You can put trial versions of apps in the store that never expire, that you can do tip jar stuff. There's a whole bunch of different sort of interesting things that you can do. But you can put $0 apps in the store. And ads. Microsoft advertising is coming to Australia, and we're working with different partners on that. If you wish to do advertising inside of your app. But we do not force you to use the Microsoft advertising solution when putting ads in your app and before submitting into the store. So we're not forcing you to use our ad system when, if you decide to use an ad-based model. So if you're using a third-party ad-based model that complies with our web Windows application certifications and things, you can bring it. You can use your own if you decide to monetize that way. So very, very flexible, a whole much more freedom than some of the competing systems out there. Trials. So one of the statistics we've got from our experience with Windows Phone is that when you have a trial, it increases the downloads by 70 times. The conversion rate, so the conversion, people converting from that trial into a full version is 10%. And the revenue goes up 10 times based on, you know, just by selling an app. So if you, what we're doing here is comparing an app where it's $1.49 to go, just to start with. You don't get a trial or anything, you've got to commit $1.49 of your money before you actually even get to use that app, versus downloading and installing a trial and then potentially, converting that later on down the stage. So trials in Windows 8 can be time limited or feature differentiated. When it comes to time-based trials, it's extremely simple. You don't have to do this in code. You essentially, at submission, you say this is a time-limited application, and the free trial period is X number of days. When you're doing trial conversion, you, in your, this is JavaScript, you get access to the license information that's underneath the scenes to work out whether this is a trial version and decide programmatically where you're going to expose a level or a layer or a particular thing in your app. So you programmatically get to do that. One of the things that you probably then is, well, how do we test this? Is that we have a mechanism called Windows Store Proxy.xml. This is a file that you can use on a local dev environment, and you can point. It's sort of like a mock of the Windows Store, and this is a way that you can programmatically or just type in what you'd like to test, you know, in-store purchases or time-based trials, without having to, you know, test, without having to submit it and test in production, which is never a good thing. So Windows Store Proxy.xml is a mechanism for you, allow you to do testing. So that's worth looking at if you're concerned about those sorts of things. We have a similar mechanism programmatically to do in-app purchases, adding extra levels, those sorts of things, and some sample code in the dev.windows.com. I'm not going to go through this line by line, but there is this mechanism built into the API. As far as advertising is concerned, Microsoft advertising, which I talked about earlier, or your own or a third-party one, we do not restrict only Microsoft advertising in the store because that isn't very nice. So you get to bring your own if you wish to. I'm not going to do a big Windows advertising spiel here, but we do have some local contacts. If you think you might be interested in this, we can connect you up with the appropriate people, and we can help you out with that. Okay. So, in terms of transparent terms, the first thing that we have with Windows 8 is the Windows App Certification Kit. Now, this has been talked about a couple of times in a couple of different sessions. Make sure I go to number two, three. I want to go on to David's machine. Is this little application called the Windows App Cert Kit. Basically, what this does is once you've built your app on your machine, you deploy it. So it's build, deploy a release version into Windows 8. And then you can validate this application. What this does is, I'm not going to run this because it does weird stuff to the screen and it takes about 5 minutes. But essentially what it does is it runs a check on this application. It's sort of like a... It's not a static test, it is actually a full live test. It launches the app, it force quits the application, it suspends the application, it does all the right, sends all the right triggers into the application to try different things out, rotation, all those sorts of things, just to make sure the application is compliant. You get a report at the end, which is this wonderful little thing, and that tells you if you're, say, using debug extension from some third party in there that needs to be, you know, the release version or something like that. And it's just a good little quality check before generally in the process of development. But it is a core part of submitting apps into the store, but also a core good practice that is recommended for when you're doing apps that are going to be installed in a line of business sort of function. Actually, on the line of business stuff, one of the other things you can do is if you can put sort of like a shim of your app or the app in the store, and if you're deploying that to an enterprise customer, what you can do is query the license information on the client and do a comparison, say, with one of your back-end services to see whether that particular individual client is licensed to that number of machines, or you might be doing some sort of volume-based billing or something like that. There are some nice little example bits and pieces that allow you to do that. Once you submit your app to the store, we have this sort of burn down of where we are through the steps. The one that takes the longest here is the content compliance. You can see that it says it normally takes 5 days. Our current SLA feeling is about 5 to 7 days from the time that you submit to the time that it's in the store. The content compliance requires a human to actually physically check things inside the application. The last thing we want to do is have one of your apps or anyone's apps have inappropriate content in it and going out into the marketplace. That is not a good thing for any one of us, and it's certainly not good for the platform. I'm going to let Patrick show some of this when he comes to talk on stage. But one of the first people I'm going to get is, I've actually put this out of order, so I'm going to ask Dev God number two, Gary Holden, to come up on stage. Gary, here we go. Round of applause, Gary. I'm not going to hug you, Gary, because we haven't signed that agreement. So, Gary, which application have you got in the Windows 8 store today?
The application I've got in the store is...
Well, unmute your microphone. That's the top button there. So this is 1 year of audio engineer training taught me how to switch that button. Isn't that cool? Anyway, just show us.
So the app I've got in the store is the official app for WP Down Under, which is the... best new site for Windows Phone in Australia.
Have you done that marketing course?
This marketing course? So this is the app. Basically, just accesses the news feed from WP Down Under, and yep, no
working. Okay, it might be the wireless network here. That's cool. So what we'll do is just try it again. So WP Down Under, how is it written whilst we just sort of tweak this and try this out? Because it did work in the practice a few moments ago.
It did. Okay. It's basically written in C# and XAML, with basically just accessing the RSS feed from the site, also using a few other APIs like through Discus for commenting and...
So did you, the Discus for commenting stuff, is there an API for that, or did you actually doing anything special there, or?
There is an API, but there was no actual library for it for Windows 8 when I built the app, so I had to create my own library for that from scratch.
Okay. I'm going to do something very, very bad here. That's what I'm just about to do. So I'm going to install something on, we'll go through the install experience. So, either already on there? Okay. But if we were to do a search, for instance, for your app, Gary, it would be search, you know, Down Under. I don't know what sort of stuff you'd be searching if you're searching for Down Under. Oh, there's WP Down Under. If the user already has it installed, it actually says you already own this application. In this case, I'm just going to do a fresh install. And what happens is that... it looks like some of your relatives are having a birthday there, Patrick. I don't know if you're aware of that. Okay, so WP Down Under is installed. User can click on that, and that will launch into WP Down Under. Now, I must admit, I did have an issue getting to WP Down Under on Monday night, but I was able to at home, so it might be something weird with the network. So what we're going to do is we'll just continue on. If people want to see WP Down Under, come and see Gary at some stage. But your application was written in C# and XAML. Which Visual Studio did you use to develop it and deploy it?
2012 Professional.
Okay. And did you use the Windows App Certification Kit?
Of course.
Okay. So what's that experience like? Did you have failures and that sort of stuff first?
At first, I had a couple of failures, mostly due to forgetting to turn it to release instead of debug. But there were a couple of things in there where I'd left an API call which wasn't supported and ended up having to clean that up. But
the certification kit actually caught that?
Yes.
Okay, so what was produced at the end of your build experience? So you built your app, what did you get at the end that you had to submit to the store?
So basically it output an app package, which was just a folder with a heap of files together, which pretty much create your app. And basically you upload those to the Windows Store and it says, yep, they're fine, and you go through the testing from there.
So from the time that you submitted it to the time that it was live in the store, do you have a feel how that was? And be honest, I'm not...
The first time I submitted it after RTM, it was basically I submitted it about 8 o'clock at night, and 5 o'clock in the morning I got an email saying, hey, your app's in the store. So it was very quick that first time.
And the second time? Be honest.
The second time it was...
This is more about me than you, yeah.
Second time the app actually failed. It was only an update and basically just said a whole heap of things which were completely untrue, that no privacy policy and a few other issues, but resubmitted it pretty much straight away and went through pretty much the same time frame of within about 7 hours.
Yeah, as far as we can tell, the second submission, Gary and I emailed, it was very late at night about this, is that he didn't change it in the second submission. It seemed like it was rejected in the content compliance stuff where a human is checking it. And we all know with human-based processes they are a bit, you know, interesting to deal with. Because, as Gary said, the privacy policy, which is basically when you submit an app, you've got to say that if you're accessing internet data, we're not, what your privacy policy is, what you're doing with that customer's data, you've got to have a clear policy on that. In the case of WP Down Under, they did have a clear privacy policy, so we know it wasn't that because the app got submitted the first time. The second time around, we're not quite sure, but because it was bug fixes more than anything. I think the thing here, just at the moment, as we settle down out some of our human-based systems, is to resubmit or email me at 11 o'clock at night. You'll be surprised that I probably will respond to help you out, get through the store. But thanks, Gary. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, like I said, I think it's more to do with the network why WP Down Under didn't work there, some weird thing. If I had time, I'd jump on Fiddler and sort of debug it. Don't trip David, because that could be very disastrous for me, because then I'd have to song and dance up before. So the second person I'd like to introduce to the stage is Patrick Klug. Patrick is the founder of Greenheart Games and also the chief architect of, a development manager, I should say, of Novamind. Over to you.
Thank you. So I will show you the store dashboard, basically. What happens when you are actually in the store with your application? And I will start with the store itself. So, if you have a Windows 8 device, the store is one click away and you get to it. And this is an amazingly attractive store if you compare it to, other stores that are available right now. And there are spotlights, it's easy to see what's going on. There are charts, so if you go to top three, for example, you can see the current thing. And, oh, I actually got up a little bit. So Game Dev Tycoon is the application that I published in mid-July. And it is still in here. I think it's no longer in the new releases section, but basically you can click on it and then you see.
I must ask you, Patrick, do you have a warning on it about people with addictive personalities like mine that shouldn't play this game?
No.
Okay, just checking.
And actually, our goal is, it's like a little motto for our company, is, less social, less will, more game, because we hate that kind of clicking spam that you get in all the social games. So we are not intending to be addictive, but yeah, I heard the comments that apparently it is. that's the little app. You can see the overview, you can go through and see the screenshots, and you see the details here, which really doesn't give you much, but you can see it runs on all the devices that Windows 8 supports. And you can see the reviews here. So this is sorted by newest. You can go to, why not? Let's go to lowest rated. All right. Well, that's one thing. You get always reviews that are actually technical issues. And unfortunately, Microsoft doesn't allow you to reply. So you can't actually get in contact with those people and say, what's going on? What do you want to do? Like, how do you start a new game? They just don't realize that there is an app bar. I guess once Windows 8 is out, it will be much easier because people will get used to that stuff. Now let's look at the better ones, I guess. All right, so that's the experience for the user. And I show you what happens when you actually have it in store. So this is on appdev.microsoft.com.
So this is the appdev.microsoft.com interface that people will see when they are an app store developer.
Yep. Correct. Okay. So before I show you the statistics you get once you have the app in the store, I'll show you what happens when you actually submit an application. You have basically those categories that you have to go through. First of all, the app name. You can reserve it before you even publish it. So in Visual Studio, you can say reserve a name. And that globally reserves that name for you so no one else can use it. In my case, in this second release that we're kind of, I actually added it just to show you how things work. I added another, did I click on the wrong thing? Yeah, I added the Chinese version of that simply because we want to use a
local. Anyone read Chinese here? Because I don't know what that means in Chinese.
Well, hopefully it means what I think. yeah, so that's one thing. Then the selling details, that's just the basic stuff. You know, is it free? You can see free, or then you have your price tiers that you can pick from. And if you would actually charge, then you can have the trial, as Nick said before. But you can also do your own kind of trial check inside for your application. Now, we have a preview version on it. We're still working on the full game, and the preview version is free. We plan to do a purchased app later on, simply because we want to make more games. Down here, you can select markets, and as you can see, I mean, this list is huge. You know, it has, I think, never been easy to publish to the entire world without having to go through and setting up your own, like, publishing contracts with companies.
What have you got against North Korea and New Zealand?
The issue there is absolutely personal. No, I'm kidding. the thing with my game is that those countries have a mandatory rating system, so you can't actually publish legally a game without a rating, like, you know.
And so you actually have to go to a government-based body or something like that and submit your game, and they provide a certificate of, you know, your game is rated XYZ.
Yeah. I talked to someone else, and they just ignored it, but I researched it, and, those countries have a mandatory one. Australia has an optional one, and as far as I could see, they couldn't even test on Windows 8, so there was no point in me trying to get a rating for it. Down here, it actually says that somewhere. If you go through here, there's always a Learn More button, and that's incredibly helpful. I definitely encourage you to click on every one of them if you go and submit your app, because you want to know the details, and you don't want to get, you know, 10 days later a mail and says, well, you forgot to tick that one, or something like that. The other thing is you have to republish to change that. I can't just say, okay, now I want to support North Korea because they have been playing nice or whatever. No, it doesn't work like that. You can set a release date. You can't just say, let me know when it's in there, and then I uncheck it. So either you know a date that you want to wait for, or you just say as soon as it goes through, you're done. And then it's the app category. So if you're in the store, actually, I'll show you, you can search. You can search, I'm sure you know that, but you can also click on those little things up here. I didn't realize that for ages. Felt a bit stupid then, anyway. And here you can go through the categories and subcategories. So if you go to games, which I'm in at the moment, and simulation game, you see that an entire app is in there, which is me. So so no competition yet, but yeah, that's pretty cool. I hope there are more simulation games because I love them, so, you know. I have an Australian account, so there are slight differences. Like if you go through to the board here, let's go down where we probably see some localized things.
I did notice that TechAU was in this prime was oh, I might see it's different.
Yeah, I think TechAU was on there, and anyway, so what you see is a localized thing. It's for it's in every country. It's different. This store thing. But my app is in all those countries available. So, and I'll show you later what you can see where those downloads come from. You can pick some hardware requirements, which are mostly for DirectX. You can say, I want to require level 10 DirectX features and a minimum of memory and accessibility guidelines, which I think is really good for productivity apps and such. The next thing is that you can specify in-app offers, and as Nick said before, you can just say, okay, I give that a price, and I can also say it expires at some stage if you want to do a subscription. the age rating is like that. It's 3+, 7+, 12+, 16+. There is no adult content on the store. That's the same as in iOS. So you can't have adult content, and they will just reject you. So for me, I just picked 12+, mostly because it said this thing here. You know, we recommend you choose the 3+ or 7+ rating only if your app is directed at children, which mine isn't. So, you know, there is nothing that would offend people, but, you know, just to make sure. And here, yeah, here you actually get required game ratings. Korea, South Africa, Brazil, Taiwan, and New Zealand was in there as well, I think, when I looked the last time, but maybe they changed something.
They might have changed the law in New Zealand. They seem to be doing that quite often.
Yeah, and the other one is the optional game ratings. I mean, if you have, you know, an action game or whatever where you have some gore in it or something, you probably should check your legal requirements for that. Then we get to cryptography, sir. Cryptography, which you might think, why do I have to tell them? Well, I think cryptography is still classified as a weapon in the United States, which is, if you didn't know that, it might sound odd. But you basically have to just confirm that you don't use cryptography to maliciously do something. So, and almost all apps that, you know, connect to server use cryptography by just, you know, if you connect to HTTPS, then you basically use cryptography. So I said here, yes, I'm using it, even though I don't. But, you know, I use, like, obfuscation and stuff like that. But anyway, it doesn't matter. You just say, I confirm I'm not doing anything malicious. The package is very easy. You drag and drop it in here. That's what you get when you build it out of Visual Studio. Then you give it a description where you can put like a lot of characters actually in there to describe your game. You can have features, keywords, and if you do an update, you have to describe the update. And you have your copyright and trademark information. Additional license term. I think that example is not very good because it says you can't reverse engineer this software. This is actually in the normal terms as well, so you don't have to put that in just if you don't, you know, want to tell people don't reverse engineer. But you can, you know, amend with your own license. I think it's amazing how flexible the store is. I mean, all the stuff that Nick talked before. You know, you can have your own commerce inside your app that completely bypasses the Microsoft thing and lots of stuff really. The images I found a bit tricky because I took them at full HD and they look terrible in the store. So next time I will try to take them actually at this resolution to see if that helps. And then you basically create promotional icons, images, that are used when your store is promoted as a featured app. Now, I'm not very surprised that I haven't been featured because those are terrible. But, you know, I will work on that on the next
version. At least it is an IBM PC.
Yes. Then you can have your website. You have to have a support contact, which is just your email address most of the time, but you can have a website where you maybe have a knowledge base or something like that. And the privacy policy, and that's really important. If you check the internet client connectivity in your app, you need to provide a privacy policy. If you don't, you get rejected. Now, I didn't know that. Here it doesn't matter, but I have a second app in the store, which is called Novamind, and there we use the internet. And we got rejected after 10 days simply because we didn't put the URL in there. And then, you know, we had to wait another 7 days to get in just because of that. So that's why I say click on every button that has a question mark and everything, just read through. And notes to testers is exactly what it says. In my case, I just told them, all right, a couple of people already reviewed that because I was in the release preview. And that's basically it. Then you submit it. As I said, you can't change anything afterwards, so be careful when you do that. And once you're in the store, you get that. We hit 10,000 downloads a couple of days ago, I think, a couple of weeks, actually. And 270 ratings, which is amazing. I never thought that we would get that because it's just a preview. It's just a small thing. I don't think personally it's that great, but it's, you know, it's a teaser for what is to come. So if you go in there, you can see, well, actually, if you go in the details, then you just see what you submitted. Basically, it's just a summary of where it is available, what you have done, and stuff like that. But the more interesting thing is the reports. Now, if you publish an app, you will get pretty, I think you will hit refresh a lot to see, you know, what's going on. And the reports aren't available immediately. Actually, the data is, I think, 2 days behind that you get. And this is our current statistic. And you can see we dropped a little. And I think what happened is that we went out of the new release section. This was the 16th of August. So that's when Windows RTM came out. You see, that was a big jump. And yeah, so we were around 200 most of the time. Now we are on 125. So install it. Yeah, that would be good. No, it's all right. So the other thing is you can see the ratings, but that gives you the ratings in the last 30 days. So it's basically a heartbeat of your application. You can see how well it does. You know, you can see if something changes suddenly. For example, if you have something that is based on media content from the internet, you might have an issue if you suddenly get a lot of bad reviews. I mean, for me, I think it's quite static because there's nothing changing. All right, this is the summary. Then, let's go back and show you the thing down here a little bit. So you can see the JavaScript exception rate, the crash rate, error reports, and the unresponsive rate. I will show you a bit later what that is. I'm going with time, am I right?
Give me a minute.
All right. This is a conversion rate. It just gives you an idea where your traffic comes from to the store page. And here you have the downloads, at a grander time scale. Normally, you would see the average of the subcategories top 5 apps. But since I'm the only app, I have no idea. So I'm my own average here. So yeah. And then this is the average app usage per day, which is quite exciting that it went up. And that's average app usage in minutes per day. This thing changes all the time on me, even on past data. So I think there is a bug somewhere. But you know, the idea is to give you a view of how many people have that. Okay. Downloads is really good if you want to look in which countries and age group or, what kind of target audience is. We have a lot of United States, United Kingdom, China, and Germany, which might also give you indication what you should translate your application in. In-app purchases, I don't really have any. And you can filter that. Now, ratings is what you probably will obsess most. Unfortunately, there is no overview where you can just export all the ratings, so you have to go through all the countries one by one and check if someone commented it. And the thing is, you get, okay, there are two new ratings, but it doesn't tell you where. So in my experience, most of the ratings come from the United States. That's our kind of the biggest market here. And you can see the latest ratings here. And the rest of the world, which is quite an interesting term.
Is there a troll filter on there? Sorry.
I will check Australia and see if there are trolls around here. No. All right. That's actually a really nice overview.
You must have got your mum to do it.
Yeah, she was just learning English, actually. Yeah, she could do that. Quality is the other thing. It gives you error reports for free, basically. And funnily enough, the most common error, which is 1514, which is 1,514 times it occurred, that's not statistically, covering everything. It just means from the things that they looked at, that was the most problematic one. Let's dump that somewhere. I already have that in there anyway. It doesn't matter. Edit with that. So, funnily enough, that is the only custom error I have in my whole game. So it's actually my own throw statement. I said attempting to override existing callback, and that got hit a lot. So obviously, I need to look at that. But you can look through crashes. You can get more information here to kind of get the dump and look at that, which is really good. Yeah. So that's basically what you get, and it's amazing what you get for, you get an overview, you have absolute control, apart from the ratings where you can't really reply. It's a great way to see how your app is doing. Yeah, I think that's it for walking through that. If you have some questions, I'm sure later we will do a Q&A. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Patrick. So deploying apps by the store is one option. And as you can see, a lot of back-end sort of data that we have access to. But when it comes to putting it within an organization, it's very different. There's a lot more control required, a lot more thought. So rather than me waffle on about it, I'm going to ask David Tezar from one of my colleagues in crime from the US, just to take us through what that looks like for Windows 8 apps. Thanks, David.
All right, thanks, Nick. All right, well, I'm an IT pro evangelist, so I am the guy who goes out there and deploys the stuff you write in your organization. I'm going to take you through about four slides here just to kind of preface things, and then after that, we will go into showing you how to implement this in case you want to take this on yourself or to pass this along to your IT staff inside of your organization. First off, there's a number of things that you need to do to prepare the machines that you want to install this Windows 8 application on inside of your organization. One is setting a group policy to install all trusted apps. And I'll show you this in a minute. It's just a group policy setting to push out via your domain. Or you could, of course, set it locally, the local group policy per individual machine if you really wanted to. And then app signing certificates are trusted. And we'll show you this in a minute. When you go into Visual Studio and you're about ready to export your app, there's a configuration setting inside of there that says what certificate do you want to use to sign the application with. That certificate is the one that needs to be trusted inside of your organization if you're going to install those apps to those devices. Then there's kind of licensing stuff here at the bottom, that last point. We do have to have either Windows 8 Enterprise, and it has to be domain joined is the first option. Otherwise, if you're with Windows 8 Professional or RT, or non-domain joined machines that happen to be Enterprise, you're going to require a secondary product key, a license for that. If you're on an Enterprise agreement, then you're going to get those licenses included. Please don't drill me on licensing. But yeah, this just gives you, you know, a kind of a rough idea of kind of the baseline of what's there. All right, deployment methods. So now that you've kind of got some of those prerequisite things in place, what is it that you need to do, or how are the means that you can push that app out to your organization? One is, of course, if your organization is building Windows 8 images, there's a number of ways to do that, and I won't get into that. But if you build that image, you can put that Windows 8 application into the image that you push out to whatever machines you have inside your organization. Then PowerShell. Now, this is just an option where, you know, if you're crafty with your PowerShell scripting, you can push that out through your organization centrally, assuming you have the appropriate ports and things opened on your machines and you've got connectivity to them. It's kind of the management on the cheap, I guess, way of trying to push this out inside your organization. Now, the bottom option, I would say, is probably really your most preferred option. And most organizations, I would say, have or probably are going to have or ideally want some form of management type software. The first is System Center Configuration Manager 2012. With the SP1, and currently the beta is out, that is able to sideload applications through a portal. And I'm going to show you a demo of this in a minute. Windows Intune Wave D, that's not out yet either, but it will be out, I believe we're saying that sometime at the end of this year or 30 days after Windows Intune, after Windows 8 ships, I don't know, one of those two. But in that wave, you'll be able to install Windows 8 applications through the self-service portal there. And I'll show you the current wave of Windows Intune here, just so you can kind of have a rough idea of what that looks like. And then the last option there is a custom Windows 8 app. And this would really be a story where you create an application that allows you to install other applications inside your organization. So at Microsoft IT, what we have is an app that you can install, and you set up the application to have to specify your domain credentials to be able to log in and use the application. And from there, then you're going to have to, you know, click on whatever the apps are to make that install. So let's go on to the PowerShell. This just gives you some of the commands that you would need to do to push that out. Now, all the prerequisites still need to be in place if you're going to use this. And granted, this is not a comprehensive step-by-step guidance, but this is just some of the commands that you could use to deploy the packages. Okay, deployment in Configuration Manager SP1. This really is your most comprehensive solution for management. It does require, you know, traditional on-premise software where you've got, you know, a VM or a physical server that you're running a Configuration Manager on, but it offers you the most power at this point in time because what you can do is you can deploy the Metro-style apps and you can force that down onto machines. You can also make it available for people to install via the self-service portal. And you've got all the capabilities that you could possibly imagine inside of the software. You also have the option to deploy deep links. Well, a deep link, all that would be is a link to the store, but you would make that available via your self-service portal. So if we wanted to have a link to Game Tycoon and have that on our company's self-service portal, then we could do that with a deep link, right? With the other thing we can do is inventory the applications, because Configuration Manager gives you an inventory, so you have hardware, software inventory, you know which apps are installed on that machine. And Winosculp Touch Mouse, no. Now, next, we're going to just go into demos. So I just wanted to give you a few slides on some kind of preliminary information there, and now I'm going to dive in to see it, so you can kind of see it in action. First off, we're going to start with the prerequisites, and what does that look like? We're going to connect up to our domain controller, and this is probably, for some of you, this is a little more IT-focused than you're used to, but it's not too complex, and again, you could maybe just pass this along to your IT folks if you needed to. I'm going to start off here with what you typically get outputted after you produce an application using Visual Studio. So here you can see there is dependencies, there's an app package here. You've got also a certificate here. This certificate is what you would be, you'd have usually like a self-signed certificate using Visual Studio. Now the first thing I want to say to you is if you know that this is going to be an enterprise application, you should talk to your IT staff, if you've got a public key infrastructure where you've got certificates and whatnot inside your organization, you should talk to them first because they may have a means of issuing you or giving you a code signing certificate that when you go into Visual Studio to sign your application, that you would sign it using the certificate that your IT guy has provided to you. That way, it's automatically going to be through a trusted certificate chain inside your organization. If not, or the guy says, you know, if you go to your IT guy and you say, do you have a PKI infrastructure? Do you have certificates? And he laughs at you or says, what? What are you talking about? Then at that point, what you'd need to do is just go ahead and use a self-signed certificate. And what you would have the person do is say, hey, I need this certificate to be trusted inside of our organization. And so what I've done is with group policy, I've gone in here and I've created a policy that has all the different settings that you might need to, or that you will need to make the apps install. In this case, you see that I've set up to push that the trusted root certificate authorities are going to be here for the app package that we had. And all we'd have to do there is go into this section in group policy, trusted root certificate authorities. We choose import. Click next. We find that app package certificate that we had from our that was exported from our app. You can see it here. And choose it, open, and after we open it, next, and then it imports into here. So then that way, when your clients are domain joined, they'll automatically trust your application from being certified. Then, those couple other settings allow all trusted apps to install. You have this recording, so you can see the path that is under group policy to push that out. The other one that's here that I don't think is really documented anywhere, but in my experience so far, I've seen that this also needs to be enabled. Now, it doesn't I'm doing allow all scripts. You could probably do remote signed. But allowing script execution with PowerShell is something I've seen that needs to be enabled. Whether, you know, whether that does in the long run need to be enabled, I'm not sure. But in just my testing, I've seen that be the case. Okay, so you've got kind of some of the prerequisites there. And after this, what you'd need to go do, I'm going to show you what it looks like inside of Configuration Manager to add an application to the self-service portal. So here, we're in Configuration Manager. We're just going to right-click, choose Create Application. And here, there's a drop-down list of different applications that you can pick. And you'll notice here, one of these is the Windows App Package. So under this, what we can do is, hold on one second here. I'm helping you out here with some Zoomit. I thought it was installed earlier, but here we go. Can everybody see the screen, the text, okay? Yeah? No? Okay. No comments. There we go. So here we go. So you have the Windows App Package, right? And so all we need to do is choose that app package. Software. And I'm going to choose a shopping application, this shopping experience application. And there's our AppX package right there, which is really the core of your app. We choose to open that, choose next. That's pretty much it. I'm going to cancel this because I've already implemented this. Once it's there, then we just choose to deploy that inside of our organization. So I choose the shopping experience, and what I can do is right-click on that, choose deploy, go through the deploy wizard, which allows me to deploy it to users or computers inside of my organization. So I can just choose, you know, all users, next. Oh, it's been all deployed, right? So I'd have to choose, let's say, device collections. I'll just choose all systems, choose next. Add it to, and this is probably a little more information than you need right now, but just to show you kind of what the experience is like on the admin side. So we'd go through this wizard here, and I'm not going to finish it. But at that point, when you're done, you would say, hey, I've got this app, I've made it available, or I'm forcing the install like to my users. All right, that's config, man. Now, what does it look like on the user side of things? Let's go over to the client one. And then what we're going to do, this is a domain join client. And by default, or we've enabled a role with this self-service portal on Configuration Manager. So when we go there, you'll notice we have this application catalog. And inside this application catalog, we have the shopping experience app. When we click on this, when we choose install, click yes, I'm sure I want to install this application. This fires off. You notice up top right, there's downloading and installing software. And just like that, the software is now installed onto this laptop or this client. When I click start, I now see I have this new app. And there we go. It's deployed. Deployed inside of my environment. So this shows you how System Center Configuration Manager allows you to push out applications without using the Windows Store at all inside of your organization. So that's, you know, for a lot of folks, you know, especially if you're a small or a medium-sized shop, you may not want to take the time or have the resources to get a System Center Configuration Manager server installed and, you know, push that inside your organization. So the other alternative would be using Windows Intune. It's our cloud-based software PC management solution. So for that, I'm going to go to the web browser. You'll see that's up here. And all this is, you can create a trial. aka.ms/windtune if you want to check that out. And once you sign up and you log in, this is the management console that you're going to see. I'm going to have to re-authenticate. That's fine. And within the console, you can download the client onto your PCs. But if you have, let's say, iOS or Android devices or other things, Windows Intune also allows you to sideload those applications. But specific to Windows 8, after clients go and download this software, they're now going to be managed inside of the environment. But right now, right, we don't support Windows 8 applications yet. But the experience should be fairly similar. So what you can see here is where we add different pieces of software. So I'm assuming that once the next version comes out, we'll have something like, adding the software here, this wizard. We click run, and what it's going to do is once you go through this wizard to upload the software, it'll put it and store it inside of Windows Azure. So really, you could have all of the infrastructure to deploy the application inside your environment without having to have any on-premise infrastructure. So here you're seeing the platform that's supported, and we would choose the Windows computer. We would specify the software setup files. Now again, we don't support that yet, but in this case, we could show whatever kind of applications we wanted to put up in the cloud. So in this case, what we can do is, go through this wizard. We click next, next after we're done. Then what you would do is deploy that application out to your environment. So here, we can choose manage. And then from there, we can say, I want to make it available to certain sub-user groups or devices inside of my organization. So this is kind of the admin side of things. But if you want to know what the user experience looks like, you can go to the company portal. And the company portal has a mobile type URL, and it has also a PC type URL. So I'm going to go to the portal URL. And you'll see here I've logged in using the credentials I provided. And it could be your corporate credentials, or it could be the cloud credentials that the user has. From there, you can see that you have your apps, your list of devices. And in this case, I have a phone, a PC, a few other things that are here. But what I would want to do, right, is once we have the next version of Windows Intune out, we could make those Windows 8 applications available via this self-service portal. You could click on that application, and then you could choose to install that application on that device. The kind of nice thing about this as well is once you have multiple PCs that are managed, you could choose to even install this application on PCs that aren't that you're not even connected to currently, and it would just make those installed on inside of your environment. Okay. So just to summarize really everything that you've seen, I've shown you kind of the prerequisites of the things you need to enable for your machines and the requirements inside your environment. I've shown you two different means via self-service portal to put your applications out there. And then I've shown you the user experience from Configuration Manager and Intune of what that looks like for the users to go and install those Windows 8 apps.
Awesome source. Thanks, David. I'm glad I didn't have to install all those VMs and get that demo running. So I really appreciate your time, David, coming and showing us that. And it's contrary to popular belief, I think we do care about how our apps are deployed and how we would potentially build an app that would go out to people that are maybe not going through the store. So it's important to know what's going on. So I'd also like to very quickly thank No more hands. I'd really, really also like to quickly thank Gary and Patrick for showing us, talking to us and showing us a little bit more about Inside the Store with some real-world examples. I'm going to really summarise this all over by saying that this is probably the largest latent opportunity out there with Windows 8 forthcoming, Windows 8 devices, touch-centric devices, building apps that really engage and enlighten and make users do cool things, whether it's building games or Novamind with mind mapping, as two for instances, or WP Down Under finding out about Windows Phone. Whatever it happens to be, now is the time to build apps and submit them into the store. As you're aware, we have a competition that is available for every TechEd attendee who builds three apps by a certain date. We have some prizes. If you need the terms and conditions, come and ask any Microsoft person and we can point you to those. Please fill in a session evaluation. Just as a precursor, if you didn't like my jokes, please don't put that in the comments because it makes me lose sleep. But apart from that, please put in the comments. We do view them, and people are the chance to win one of these Sculpt Touch mice. But with that, I think we've finished this session. Feel free to come and ask us questions at any time. Otherwise, go and enjoy lunch and enjoy the hype tonight. Thank you very much.